This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Science and Thanksgiving. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Cranberries have to be on the table for Thanksgiving, right? No matter how you feel about them.
It just is there. I just show up at my Aunt Peggy's house and it's just like in a dish.
I like cranberries. I prefer cranberry sauce when it's not like, you know, the little fruits in it. I like it to be like smooth. It's good.
It's gross.
The canned cranberry sauce, I can't stand. But like homemade cranberry sauce is really good.
So how do these berries make their way to our tables? You've probably seen those cranberry commercials where two farmers wearing waders stand waist deep in a sea of red berries.
Ah, refreshing.
Ocean Spray Cran Lemonade.
During harvest, farmers flood their bogs and the berries float to the top. So growing cranberries requires clever engineering, but also a very special type of environment and a lot of water. Growers have to walk a careful line between keeping production up and keeping their land healthy. Steph Yin reports from the New Jersey Pine Barrens, where cranberry growing is a multi-generational tradition for many families.
The Pine Barrens are a spread of dense coastal forest in South Jersey, a million acres, stretching over more than a fifth of the state. Here, you'll find a history of outlaws and smugglers, and many a ghost story. From sandy, acidic soil, which locals call sugar sand, sprout rare orchids, carnivorous plants, and pygmy pitch pines, with twisted branches and multiple trunks per tree. Rivers and streams flow with what looks like tea, the water dyed reddish-brown from cedar trees. This is home to a rich agricultural community, too. Commercial cranberry farming started here in the mid-1800s. The farmers bought large tracts of land for cheap, started cultivating the berries that were growing there naturally. They consider themselves stewards of a rare and remarkable ecosystem.
We look at cranberries as part of a larger system around the bogs.
That's Steve Lee, a fifth-generation Pine Barrens cranberry farmer. He says cranberries grow wild all over here. Canoe down any local river, and you might be able to collect the fruit right off the riverbed.
They belong in wetlands. If you find a cranberry vine growing in the New Jersey Pinelands, by definition, you are in a wetland. And we've learned to live in harmony with the wetlands.
A large part of that has to do with water. It's a popular misconception that cranberry bogs are always underwater. But it's true that water is important, crucial really, to cranberry farming. It's hard to pick cranberries from vines on the ground. So to make harvest easier, most cranberry growers flood their bogs in the fall. The berries float to the surface. Then growers use harvesting machines called egg beaters to knock them off the vine. In the winter, the bogs are flooded again. This time, the water insulates the plants from frost. Underlying the Pine Barrens is a natural aquifer, 17 trillion gallons of bacterially sterile, sand-filtered water that scientists have compared to melted glacial ice.
So we got a floodgate here.
The farmers here divert water from nearby streams and rivers to flood their bogs. It's an interconnected system that allows them to share and cycle water between one another.
Like we have our neighbors to the north, the Lees, and our neighbors to the south, the Suis. We got to work with them. Like, hey, I'm sending some water your way. Hey, we need some water.
That's Mike Haynes. He and his sister Steph are giving me a tour of their farm.
Like a new bog, we renovated a couple years.
Mike and Steph are fifth generation growers, and they help run their family business, the Pine Island Cranberry Company. They sell their cranberries through Ocean Spray, which is a private co-op of some 700 cranberry farms. Ocean Spray dominates the U.S. market. The co-op takes berries grown by farmers, markets them, and processes them into products like juice, craisins, or the cranberry sauce you might be having for Thanksgiving. Steph says water is central to their operation.
If we do not have a clean, abundant water supply, then we don't get anywhere.
Their grandfather built the family business accordingly.
He was the one who understood the importance of farming for not him, not for himself, not for his generation, not even for the next generation, but like for my generation. A lot of what we're doing now is built upon what he was doing back in the 40s and 50s.
To ensure clean water, you need to control a lot of land. In the Pinelands, growers follow this general rule of thumb. For every 1 acre of producing cranberry bog, they maintain 9 acres of supporting woodland to protect the watershed. But cranberry farming can pose a major threat to waterways because of pesticide and fertilizer runoff. Think of the settings cranberries thrive in. Moist, swampy. It's the kind of situation insects, fungi, parasites, and weeds love. The vast majority of farms use a range of synthetic chemicals, which get discharged into local water bodies and can be harmful. And it doesn't help that regulation is murky. A legal loophole makes runoff from cranberry bogs exempt from the Federal Clean Water Act. The New Jersey farmers say they use fertilizers sparingly.
It's not a hit or miss. It's very calculated.
But in reducing pesticides, farmers have to keep a watchful eye on one specific pest.
The blunt-nosed leafhopper.
Leafhopper.
A leafhopper.
With the leafhopper.
Called the blunt-nosed leafhopper.
The blunt-nosed leafhopper. It transmits a phytoplasma, or bacteria, that causes something called false blossom disease. In the 1920s and 30s, that disease nearly eradicated cranberry farming in New Jersey. Over the last decade, farmers and researchers have noticed that leafhoppers are starting to return. Just down the road from Steve Lee's and Stephen Mike Haynes' farms is the Rutgers University Marucci Center for Blueberry and Cranberry Research.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I tried to drive into the forest.
Here, researchers like Cesar Rodriguez Sauna are trying to find ways to fight back in a sustainable way.
So here we have plants that are infected and non-infected.
Cesar is looking for alternatives to chemicals. That might be boosting the natural defenses plants have, or encouraging populations of natural enemies, predators of cranberry pests. For instance,
parasitic wasps that attack the eggs of leafhoppers.
Researchers are also trying to figure out how and if ecosystems bounce back after years of cranberry growing. My last stop is to a former bog with Ped Deneshgar, an ecologist at Monmouth University in New Jersey. I'm here with him and other members of his lab, and we're trying to find a trace of what once was.
I'm trying to see if I can find a surviving cranberry.
Do you think there is one?
Well, we found some last time.
Really?
Yeah. You just see them. They're usually really little. They look more like how they...
If you didn't know this was once a thriving cranberry bog, you wouldn't guess it. It feels like a wild ecosystem. We're surrounded by trees, some as tall as 30 or 40 feet. There's a layer of pine needles underfoot. Overhead, blue jays are calling, trying to shoo us from their territory.
Yeah, blue jays are not thrilled with us being
territorial.
Ped says half a century ago, instead of trees, cranberry vines covered this area. Visiting abandoned bogs across the Pinelands, he found it doesn't take long for these sites to unravel back into a wild state. Together, we go to a bog that's been neglected for just a few years. Already, there are saplings and woody shrubs sprouting up.
Little baby red maples like that. Usually those are spot treated with herbicide to get rid of them.
So this is maple.
Yep, and then they transition to that. And they like wet soil. So they're part of like the process of transitioning back to a forest system.
Cranberry bogs swiftly returning to nature, decades of heavy agriculture forgiven. This isn't really what I was expecting to find. I asked Ped about it.
I started this with the idea that we were going to find some really scary things.
Instead, Ped was surprised to find that the effects of intensive cranberry agriculture seemed minimal, at least with some time. But, he says, while nature seems robust here, it's still crucial to pay attention to the immediate short-term impacts of cranberry farming.
I think it's more of a testament of the Pinelands just being very resilient.
That story was reported by Steph Yen.